Have you ever been desperately lonely to the point when every element of your life seems to cause you some sort of heartache? Have you ever been in love and something happened so that you emotionally ached? Well, if you have, then this is your psalm. If you've ever had someone you care about turn away from you and turn against you, you need Psalm 88. That person may have been an acquaintance, that person may have been a lover, or that person may have been a friend. And if you know the hurt and emptiness and the pain of that kind of thing, you can well relate to Psalm 88. Frankie Valli used to sing a song, "Cry Myself to Sleep." And in this song, in Psalm 88, that really does happen. This psalm is for hurting people who feel so all alone. This psalm has been called the saddest psalm in the entire book of Psalms. And from the superscription, we can see some things. It's a song, which means that this was not only to be taught, but to be sung. It's a psalm of the sons of Korah, which means these imperfect priests were responsible to see that it was sung. And it's for the choir director, again emphasizing that the choir was to sing this psalm. And it was according to Mahalath Leonath. And some suggest that refers to that soothing instrument of a harp. The meaning seems to refer to employing a soothing instrument in great moments of sorrow and grief. It was a masko, which means that it's a didactic psalm designed to be taught and give instruction. And it was written by Heman. It was a very wise man who lived in Solomon's day, who was only superseded in wisdom by Solomon. The primary application of this psalm is going to be later, when the Jewish people who are faithful to God will face abandonment and death. As we go through the psalm, we will point out why we think this, but there certainly is a practical point to it, and that's when faithful people of God face the worst depression of their lives, the right thing to do and the only thing they must do is to pray to God for deliverance. And no matter how depressing things are which surround us, faithful people of God always have an option of praying that's available to them. And when you know God, there's a possibility of deliverance, but prayer is part of that. Prayer is emotionally made to God for deliverance. The verses 1 and 2 of Psalm 88. O Lord God of my salvation, I cry out day and night before you. Let my prayer come before you. Incline your ear to my cry. When one of your children cries out in the night, most parents are right there to see what is happening. It is that way with God. One of the things to do when we are emotionally distraught is to use these emotions to cry out to God. That's exactly what Heman does here. Heman realizes that God was a God who could save from anything, and he cried out to God day and night with that belief. Too many of God's people view prayer as an afterthought when it should be the first thing. God's people at times go through some very dark times to the point that it almost seems as if there's no hope. With God, there's always hope. If you find yourself in a dark and depressing situation, talk to God. Tell it to God. Pray to God. Let your emotions pour out before Him. As long as you talk to God, you have hope. So talk to God day and night. Spurgeon said, any evil can be transformed into good when we are driven to prayer. And Heman not only prayed, but in verse 2, he prayed day and night for God to listen and answer. And then prayer is emotionally made to God for legitimate reasons. Look at verses 3 through 9. For my soul is full of troubles, and my life draws near to Sheol. I'm counting among those who go down to the pit. I'm a man who has no strength, like one set loose among the dead, like the slain that lie in the grave, like those whom you remember no more, for they are cut off from your hand. You have put me in the depths of the pit, in the regions dark and deep. Your wrath lies heavy upon me, and you overwhelm me with all your waves. Selah. You have caused my companions to shun me. You have made me a horror to them. I am shut in so that I cannot escape. My eye grows dim through sorrow. Every day I call upon you, O Lord. I spread out my hands to you. He states his case why he's praying like this. There's a practical reason. It's one thing to have your hands full of trouble. It's quite another thing to have your soul full of trouble. The practical reason Heman prayed was because his soul had finally had enough. He He was obviously troubled in his soul. Nothing will trouble one, our soul, more than sin. It makes us depressed. It makes things dark. There's only one thing to do when the soul is in trouble, and that's cry out to God. And then there's the humiliation reason. It's clear that this believer was totally and completely humiliated. People were saying that he was on his way down, and they were saying that he had become a weak man. And according to verse 5, he had been forsaken by many people, and they were saying his life is over. Even one who had been his lover had abandoned him. They were claiming he was doomed and cut off from God. Now the description given in that verse 5 is that of an unbeliever who's dead. Unbelievers are not remembered in favor by God when they die. They are cut off from God. If a person dies as an unbeliever, it's the most depressing moment of all. People were saying these things about Haman. He was totally humiliating. We may learn a very important principle here, and that is we do not need any strength to pray. What we need is faith. Times when we are weak are some of the best times for us to pray, because strength comes from God. And then there's this divine sovereignty reason. Very important verses, because these verses clearly teach us that even in the darkest hour of life, one of the most important doctrines we may cling to is the doctrine of the sovereignty of God. The believer has an awesome view of the sovereignty of God. The believer who finds himself in a serious and desperate situation believed totally and completely in God's sovereignty, and he believed that God could intervene at any point and turn things around. Here's this perspective. God had sovereignly ordained this dark time for this believer. He believed God oversaw this and had put him in this state. When things are dark, the best thing we can do is to cling to the sovereignty of God. And God had sovereignly afflicted this faithful believer. This has many personal ramifications. Because it is even when we have done something that could anger God to the point that he's afflicting us with negative things, we may cry out to him, for he has a sovereign power to put an end to that. And that Selah says, stop and think about that. And then God has sovereignly isolated this faithful believer. It's very clear that this isolation was due to the fact that people close to him had turned their backs on him and were mocking him and even loathing him. It's important to realize that when someone close to you turns against God, God is still sovereign. The reason why they may turn against you is because you are right with God and they are not. One of the worst disasters you will ever face in your life is when someone you love turns against you and abandons you. There will be times you'll cry yourself to sleep, but those are times to also cry to God, because he's still sovereign. And God sovereignly permitted a wasting of this faithful believer. When you're hurting, when you're struggling, when you're even hungry, what most forget is that God is still sovereign, and God's people always have a right to call out to God for help. They need to cry out, as verse 9 says, every day. And then there's this apologetic and evangelistic reason, the verses 10 through 13. Do you work wonders for the dead? Do the departed rise up to praise you, Selah? Is your steadfast love declared in the grave, or your faithfulness to Abaddon? Are your wonders known in the darkness, or your righteousness in the land of forgetfulness? But I, O Lord, cry to you. In the morning my prayer comes before you. These verses are fascinating. The central point of these verses is that dead people cannot testify the greatness of God and the attributes of God. The point is only delivered people are in the position to testify for God, not dead people. In fact, he says, Selah, stop and think about that. And here's the declarations. Delivered people can testify to God's mercy. Redeemed people testify of the grace and mercy of God, not dead people. Delivered people can testify of God's faithfulness. Delivered people can declare God's wonders. Delivered people can declare God's righteousness. We learn from verse 13 that every morning this believer cried out to the Lord. Prayer is personally made to God individually. Verses 14 through 18. O Lord, why do you cast my soul away? Why do you hide your face from me? Afflicted and close to death from my youth up, I suffer your terrors. I am helpless. Your wrath has swept over me. Your dreadful assaults destroy me. They surround me like the flood all day long. They close in on me together. You have caused my beloved and my friend to shun me. My companions have become darkness. God is a personal God, and he desires that his people have a close and personal relationship with him, even in times of trouble. This obviously was an open, honest relationship, and there was heartfelt communication taking place. God seems to be rejecting the desire of the soul. God seems to be hiding his face from his people. God knows all trouble one has from youth, and some people suffer at a young age. Regardless of how often one does suffer, one always has the right to call it to God. And God does get angry, and he does target people with his anger. We can make God angry, but by crying out to him, he can turn his anger from us. And God can surround his people with negative things all day long. God can remove from us even those closest to us. And here's the point. When God is doing these things, what option do people have? There's only one. Cry out to God. Perhaps you're stressed out in the world. Perhaps you're an emotional disaster. Cry out to God. He cares for you, and he can and will answer you.